Welcome to the Light in the Attic podcast. My name is Hillary. I am the project coordinator as well as the marketing and social media manager for the label.
And my name is Jackie, and I am the publicist at the label. And what you're hearing right now is a track called Missouri Waltz by a band called The Shags, which is the topic of our episode today. The Shags were a sister act out of Fremont, New Hampshire in the 60s and 70s, who've become sort of emblematic of the outsider genre, which is music by anyone not actually a part of the commercial music industry or anyone who sort of goes against standards of the music industry.
I think the Shags accidentally became these heroes of the outsider movement without really intending to do so.
Right, because the whole origin story, they were three sisters whose father, his mother, so the girl's grandmother, she foresaw a few different things. I think the first thing was that his name was Austin Wiggin. The first thing she said was that Austin would marry a strawberry blonde, that he would have two sons, and then that his daughters would be in a rock band.
Two out of three of those came true?
He ended up marrying a strawberry blonde, and they had two sons, and then they had three daughters. There's Betty, Helen, and Dot in the band. And then since the first two parts of the prophecy had come true, he was like, all right, I guess my daughters need to be a band. So he forced them to practice every day and write songs, and what resulted was this very strange album called The Philosophy of the World. It's three sisters who play their instruments not super well and who write really endearing lyrics that, you know, 14-year-old girls would write about their parents and their cat Foot who ran away, and Halloween, and
there are plenty of other bands who aren't particularly skilled with their instruments, but I think what makes the Shags interesting is that when you listen to the music, especially on Philosophy of the World, it almost sounds like the lyrics were created and the melody were created completely separately from the instrumentation. It sounds like the people playing the instruments are in a completely different state than the people singing the songs. It's kind of cacophonous, but in an amazingly charming way.
Yeah, so that song that we just played is kind of an anomaly in my opinion, because it's actually really pleasant, I think. Like, I actually was listening to it in my car the other day because I like it. Whereas the album, Philosophy of the World, which that song is not on, is not my favorite to listen to. It actually kind of stresses me out, to be honest.
See, and that's what's interesting about this album is that it has a history of being very divisive. People either really love it or they really can't deal with it.
And I think I'm somewhere in between, because I love the idea behind it and the story behind it, but I don't like listening to it because because the rhythm is totally off, and it just stresses me out for some reason.
I don't think I would go as far as, say, Frank Zappa, who is notorious for loving the Shags so much that he was quoted saying that they were better than the Beatles. And I don't know if I would go that far, but another really interesting thing about this record is that originally there were 1,000 copies pressed, and only 100 of them survived. 900 of those vanished out of the warehouse, and therefore being left with 100 copies of an album that became pretty sought after by some.
Yeah, so the record's on Discogs for $10,000 from the first pressing, because there were only 100 copies that actually ever were in circulation.
Yeah, I saw one for $3,000 that was VG Plus. And then,
what does that mean?
Like, very good.
Oh.
Like, record collector talk. Like, that record's VG.
Gotcha.
As opposed to the $10,000 copy, which is NM, which is near mint condition, meaning it's still in the shrink wrap. And it's been kept out of
that
the sunlight.
Is crazy.
Yeah. So someone's been sitting on a copy of this and wants $10,000.
Yeah.
But now you can get your own copy for a low price from us.
Yes, because we reissued the album in September.
Yeah. Well, in this episode, we have Ira Kaplan. If you are familiar with the band Yola Tango, he is the singer as well as the guitarist for Yola Tango. And we were able to get him on the phone with Dot Wiggin from the Shags, and he does an interview with her.
Yeah, he's a big fan and was really excited to talk to Dot, who's sort of the voice of the Shags. She's the one who's remained active in music. She has a band called the Dot Wiggin Band. So first up is that interview, and then after that we have Lenny Kaye, guitarist from the Patti Smith Group, and also the guy who compiled the Nuggets comp. So he wrote the liner notes for our reissue of Philosophy of the World, and he's going to read excerpts of those. Without further ado, we're going to play a Shag song that is a little bit more exemplary.
Yeah.
It's a more traditional Shag song in that it's funky.
The Philosophy of the World by the Shags.
Oh, the rich people want what the poor people's got, and the poor people want what the rich people's got, and the skinny people want what the fat people's got, and the fat people want what the skinny people's got. You can never please anybody in this world. The short people want what the tall.
We have Dot Wiggin from the band The Shags on the line with Ira Kaplan of Yola Tango. And it's a pleasure to have both of you here for the Light in the Attic podcast today. We're incredibly excited. And why don't you guys say hello?
Hi, Dot.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. It's very exciting to get to talk to you. I spoke to you very, very briefly. I was one of the many people online for an autograph at the Bowery Ballroom when you and Betty played with NRBQ.
Okay. Yeah, that was a while ago.
I know. But am I right? That's the only time that you played after you know, since when you once you stopped playing, the only time the two of you played together was that night, those two nights?
Yeah.
Am I correct also that you haven't really done that many interviews?
More in the recent couple of years, but before that, no.
Those shows were magical. Was that a good experience? Magical for me. Were they a good experience for the two of you?
Yes, they were. Yeah, that was fun. It was fun seeing the fans that we didn't realize we had so many fans all over the world. So, yeah, it was amazing.
And I was reading that, let me see if I can, I wrote down the quote somewhere, about you said that you improvised some chords to make some of the songs easier, which made me curious how, I mean, you must have had to go back to relearn the songs, right? You didn't remember them.
No, we had all our music sheets that I had written them. So on regular music paper, and the words are under the notes and the chords are above the notes.
I play in a band, and I don't think I could do that for our songs. I know a little bit about reading music, but not enough to actually write them out.
Mm-hmm. We never played the music without the music in front of us, even back when we were the Shags. We always had the music.
Wow. So talk about those shows a little longer. When you did the four songs, did you and Betty try other ones, or did you decide on those four and then work on them? How?
I think Terry Adams requested, and I think he requested, I don't remember which four we did, but I'm sure we did My Pal Put For It. And he requested a couple, and then we picked out the two that were our favorites, or the easiest to play.
Right. I have to say, I remembered My Pal Put For It and Philosophy of the World, and I wasn't positive. I thought the other two had been from the later recordings, and I looked it up, and it was Painful Memories and My Cutie. Those were two of your favorites from, those were the two you selected.
Right. He's My Cutie, I selected, and Betty selected Painful Memories because that's the one she wrote, the only one she wrote.
And did you, how much, like, what was the process of relearning the songs? Did you, because it was amazing to me that you sounded exactly the same. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, we had to rent guitars and rent amplifiers and microphones. I guess, I don't know, I don't think we rented microphones. We just went without any until we got to the show. But, yeah, we basically started all over.
Yep. I was curious to know something about you. Like, do you listen to music now?
I do. I still, most of, like, when I'm in my vehicle, I listen to CDs. I just haven't found a radio station that I really like with the music, so I still listen to Herman Hermits. I have quite a few Elvis CDs, and I listen to NIBQ. And trying to think of who else. I met up with a fan that is he does a one-man show, plays two or three different types of guitars, Ed Gerhard. And he, I've got a few of his CDs. It's very comforting music, very relaxing, so I listen to his. And then some inspirational CDs.
Do you go to the movies? Do you rent movies, or...?
My son rents a lot of movies. I go to the movies once in a while. Usually it's a couple of religious ones, like God's Not Dead, I've seen that, and God's Not Dead 2, I've seen that. I'm very religious, and I also teach Sunday school, and I'm in the church choir.
And have you taught Sunday school for a long time?
I have. I taught when I was 17 in Fremont until I was 27, then I got married and I had to work every other weekend, so I kind of got out of it. And then after my two sons became teenagers, I got back into it again, and I'm still... So I've been teaching in Effin for probably close to 20 years.
So I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous to talk to you, but too late for that. I'm going to bounce around a little bit. I was listening to the records again today, just, you know, thinking about it, and I was listening to the vocal version of Shag's Own Thing. Do you remember it's so long ago. Do you remember the recordings? And
I remember the first time we went to the recording studio. I don't remember. They say we went twice. I guess we must have. We did the second album. But I don't remember going the second time. And I don't remember my father and brother recording at the studio, though I know they did, because my brother Austin is the one who sang it with my father at the dances. But when we went to the recording studio, my brother was working, so my other brother, Robert, is the one that's on the recording.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you about something else I read in an interview about your dog, who's diabetic.
Yes.
Is your dog still with us?
Yep, he's 10. He's going to be 11 in November. He's pretty much, he's not seeing a whole lot. He's pretty much blind.
That's the diabetes, right?
Yes. And he has cataracts, but he's too old for them to do surgery.
Because
we also rescued another dog who is 7, and she is completely blind. She wasn't when we got her. We've had her for, she was 5. She's going to be 8. Well, this month she's going to be 8. So a month after she turned 7, she went totally blind. So we had her tested to make sure there wasn't a nerve on her brain or a tumor on her brain. And nope, she's not in any pain, except for when she bumps into things. But she goes slow. She's not hyper, so she... It's almost like she expects she's going to bump into something, so she goes slow, and then she just stops and turns and goes the right way.
So
as long as I don't move or change the furniture around, she's fine.
So she stays inside.
Oh, they both are. They're both either inside or on, they're hooked.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I took special note of the your dog with diabetes because the band I play in, my wife is in the group, and our cat is no longer alive, but for many years he was alive, and he had developed diabetes and required insulin shots, and we would go on tour, and it was so difficult to leave him behind with sitters to would have to provide, who would have to give him his injections, and
right.
Very sympathetic when I was reading about your
reluctant. Yeah, my other son Matt, when I have, if I go on tour or something, I'm not going to make it home. He takes care of both of the dogs and gives Newman his insulin. Him and I are the only ones that give him his insulin, unless one time I've left him at the vet, which I don't like to do, but I know he's in good hands, so.
And you came to New York and saw the play about you.
Yes.
That must have been the most bizarre thing of all.
Yes, it's a good word for it. It was strange sitting, watching the play. And I go to plays a lot. I do that, too. We have a theater right in town. It's like 5 minutes from where I live. And actually, the choir director at the church I go to is also the head of the theater. I'm really connected with them. And we go to just about every play they do. But so I'm familiar with plays, but it was very, I'm going to use your word, very bizarre to go to the play that we were in and sit in the audience and watch the actresses and actor perform basically our lives as the Shags. So, yeah, that was different. It was amazing.
And they must have been so nervous knowing you were there.
Yeah, I bet they were. We met one of them in person before we went to the play. He had come to Eppen and went to a church service, and he was in the audience, and then I met him afterwards. He's the one that played my dad, Peter Friedman.
Right, right. Yeah, we went to see it. And now, how did your children learn about your past as a rock star?
My late husband was a fan, basically, and he would always be pushing it. So my younger son liked it. He's into music, and he liked listens to our music all the time. My oldest son is more into video games, so he really doesn't get into the music. It's not his type of music, and he doesn't listen to a whole lot of music anyway. He likes Weird Al, and then he used to like.
Well, I'm sure Weird Al likes the Shags.
I don't know. Maybe. We've gone to a few of his concerts. I never
Wow, the next time you go to a Weird Al show, get somebody to find a way to be introduced. He seems like I don't know him, but he seems like a very smart, astute person in a lot of ways, and I would bet he would be a Shags fan.
He might be. I never thought to ask.
Well, I think I've borrowed enough of your time.
Okay.
It's been a great pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, you also.
To Western ears, attuned to the tempered scale and regular beats within a measure, pitch perfect and fussed over so that nary an electron is out of place, the Shags' now venerated album might seem an arbitrary hodgepodge of clattering drum beats and askew vocals, outro rhythm, and melodies skittering where they might. But his ears accustomed, as first having an all-too-easy laugh, then listening with increasing compulsion, the inner logic of each triangular puzzle piece offers a hypnotic gateway into an alternate universe, the looking glass prism of the Wiggins sisters and their worldly philosophy. Simple truths are revealed. The rich people want what the poor people got, just as the poor people want what the rich people got. Your parents love you. There is happiness in nearness and sadness in the farness of Foot-Foot, the Wiggins' runaway feline. There are things to wonder, coupled with the irony of never finding out that which you wonder most. All this wondering leading to the wonder of it all, how philosophy of the world became such a prized artifact. A Rosetta Stone of art, artless and artful.
I don't have time to roam. I have things to do. I have to go home. Oh, Fort Ford, where are you?
The Wiggin family lived in Fremont, New Hampshire, on the other side of Boston's urban divide. Dislocated, legend will have it, as a small town might in the Appalachian foothills, preserving folkways in isolation. Perhaps this is an exaggeration, given the proximity of Fleetwood Recording Studio in Revere, Massachusetts, approximately an hour and a half away, where one day in 1967, as the summer of love entered its fall, Austin brought daughters Dot and Betty on matching Avalon guitars and Helen on drums to make a record. It wasn't the whole clan. There was a brother, Austin III, who occasionally played maracas, another sister, Rachel, who was learning bass, a youngest brother, Robert, known as Butch, and their mother, Annie. But it was what Austin had been working toward for years. "What we did as a family," remembered Betty later, with little sentimentality or nostalgia. Austin was an old-fashioned dad, strict enough to make sure his girls stayed and were schooled at home, adhering them to a rigorous instrumental and vocal practice schedule combined with another hour of jumping jacks and sit-ups, and new-fashioned enough to witness the garage bandorama sweeping America, envisioning the Shags within its holy parameters. The girls range in age from 18 to 22, spaced 2 years apart, Betty to Dot to Helen. They're making their first record. They've had to overcome behind-the-back taunts from the local kids in Fremont, schoolmates they're not allowed to have, but who will nonetheless come to the weekly Saturday concerts at the town hall to watch, or at least backdrop, the band's dogged determination to align their instruments, to be the band their father wants them to be.
And when you're home Tuesday, we make a perfect team. It's so hard to have to wait for you to ride us to the gate. But when you get there, we have many news and feelings to share.
Dot writes the songs with lyrics that reveal Socratic and Platonic truth in simple aphorisms. They really don't want to be at Fleetwood Recording. Though she doesn't say this to her father, Betty thinks to herself, let's just get this over with and get out of here. Dot is more, well, philosophical about it all, especially since she's tasked with being the songwriter. Despite her isolation, she hears British hitmakers like Herman's Hermits, her favorite, over the radio, and has come up with her own transliteration, a clue to why, against all odds, the Shags have had such a long afterlife. It just came out of my head, she says. When I wrote the lyrics, I already had the way the song was supposed to be, the tune of it, so then I matched the melody with words, and then chords with melody. It's this insistent melody, sung in unison with Betty, reinforced by her lead guitar noting that same melody, the drums solidly punctuating their arrhythmical scan, that provides the key to the Shags' inherent and unexpected catchiness, the way they pull you into their way of hearing. They've never been in a recording studio before. It is, in fact, the first time they've been out of the basement, the residency at the Fremont Town Hall not even starting until after they've made this album. They're still learning to play, and even though they will remain idiosyncratic, later recordings such as a version of The Carpenters' Yesterday Once More on Shag's Own Thing shows an exponential increase in craftsmanship. Their work is best endeared backwards, as befits a group whose tale appreciates in retrospect. That it is heard at all is a miracle. Just 100 of the contracted pressing of 1,000 copies of Philosophy of the World make it out into that very world, and then only in a small quadrant of New England. And at this point, even though they've been practicing for a few years, they're still figuring themselves out. They even know how to read music, urged by their father to keep at it until they get it right, practicing one song over and over and over. "You're going to do this," he says, unsmiling, driven. But it comes more from a sense of belief than militarism. "Austin wasn't like a drill sergeant," said Jeff Landroach, who engineered a later Shag session at Fleetwood, to BBC radio host John Rosen. "He was more like a girls' softball coach. Come on, girls, let's go, let's go." There wasn't a lot of go-go to the Shags. They were about the music, dressed down, hardly sporting the spangles and come-hithers expected of all-girl bands in the 1960s. Russ Hamm, the engineer at Fleetwood, at the time the group showed up on the studio's doorstep, hardly knew where to start. It was bizarre, he recalled, of the day that My Pal Foot Foot was placed in its time capsule. They set up, drums and two guitars. They start playing, and I mean it's hard not to burst out laughing. What is going on here? I turned to Austin and I said, look, I'm not a guitar player, but I think I can tune those guitars. And he looked at me and says, no, those guitars are guaranteed. I bought those guitars from Ted Herbert's Music Mart in Manchester. They're the finest guitars and they're guaranteed. Fleetwood was used to strange sound ventures. Along with recording bands from the local Boston area scene, including the Boston Pops Orchestra, they did champion season souvenir recaps with Beantown sports stars from John Havlicek to Carl Yastrzemski. Early in the 60s, they founded an eponymous record label, headquartered in nearby Lynn, that traveled to racetracks, capturing the exhaust fumes of automotive engines at full throttle. The Sound of Auto Racing has separate cuts featuring drag racing, drag boat racing, midget auto racing, and jalopy racing. Or you could relive the gear shifts of NASCAR's 1963 Rebel 300 from Darlington, South Carolina. A mainstay for the studio was Vanity Productions, much as Sun Records kept its doors open in Memphis in 1954, awaiting Elvis. The Shags continued Fleetwood's carburetor tradition with one of the songs on Philosophy of the World. That little sports car is a Roadrunner race which finds Dot chasing the fella that drove slippery as an oyster. Every minute, faster and faster, my heart thumped. Wow, I was almost a goner. Losing him, I turned around and headed for home. I learned my lesson, never to roam. Austin's good girl. Fleetwood's building had previously been a supermarket and so had a large recording room, about 100 by 50 feet with a 15-foot high ceiling. The control booth was in the meat locker and the reverb chamber was in the garage where grocery trucks would unload. The Shags set up in a corner, pretty much how they did in the basement, with Helen in the middle. As Terry Adams of NRBQ would find when he remixed the multitracks for digital release in the 1990s, there was no separation of the guitars since they were combined on one track. They were coming through the same amp. I wanted to split the rhythm and lead guitar real bad, he said, but then a light went off. Two inputs, he marvels to this day. What did they need two amps for? There's a track for the drums and another for the vocals. The fourth track is empty. That's the one, I surmise, left open for Austin's presence, even though the only instrument he can play, aside from a bit of jew's harp, is the Shags themselves. They complete the finished Philosophy of the World on March 9, 1969. The album closes with a fervent, "We Have a Savior." I think of the cloistered existence the Wiggin sisters endured, the sense of discipline and denial that their music was born from, the ministerial motivations of their father, the parable-like quality of their music, and the prodigal cat that is Foot Foot. For a time, it seemed as if the Shags were going mainstream. An article in The New Yorker by Susan Orlean brought them to the attention of Hollywood. Tom Cruise's production company optioned the article, and Artisan Entertainment contracted the Shags directly with hopes of filming their rags-to-riches tale. An off-Broadway musical recreated the world of the Shags. Dot Wiggin recorded a solo album. Hipsters tattooed Dot's album cover drawing of Foot Foot on their own feet. After so many decades hovering in the culture's subconscious, it proved to be too much too soon. Or much of the same, since by now the sisters had gotten used to their off-the-beaten-path life in rural New Hampshire, with jobs and families of their own, still living, fairly close, except for my youngest brother, Robert. He's in Indiana. We talk on the phone and catch up. I'm in Epping. Betty is in West Epping, about 2 or 3 miles from me. My brother, Austin, is also in Epping, so he's even closer than Betty. And Rachel is living in Raymond, which is a little bit further, a neighboring town. Helen has since passed on. The Wiggins are family. As Andy Paley points out to me, himself once part of the Paley Brothers duo, it's a sibling thing. It's easier, and in some ways harder, to be in a band with your brothers and sisters. There is a telepathy of shared experience, reinforced by tangled genealogical ties and ancestries that reveal DNAs playing out over centuries. Andy reels off a list of familial groups, the Beach Boys, the Bee Gees, the Everlys, the Kinks, the Collins Kids, the Louvins, the Ronettes. Sometimes there's an overbearing father figure guiding the harmonies, Murray Wilson or Joe Jackson, Bud Cowsill or Phil Spector. And who's to say whether the blood is thicker blend that results is a byproduct of a paternalistic determination to keep the family together. But there wouldn't have been a Shags if not for Austin Wiggin. He thought they were going to be famous. He was right. They are famous. That's what I realize. They didn't get on Ed Sullivan. People may have laughed at them, but they're world famous. Austin knew what he was talking about. That might be accidental, but he knew he had something, and credit has to be given there. So we do, celebrating another resurrection of an album that, like Foot Foot, seems to circle ever home to the Wiggin family hearth, even though the real Foot Foot never did return. I wanted to put a happy ending on it, says Dot. It's almost like we had two lives, she'll tell the Associated Press, whose interest is telling of the Shags' renown, their philosophy made manifest. That was then. This is now. Only the then is becoming the now. Sounds like a Shags lyric to me.
Well, you just heard Lenny Kaye reading his notes from Philosophy of the World.
Yeah, it's really cool that we got him to do the liners for our reissue.
Mm-hmm. And our bosses got to go hang out with him recently when Patti Smith played in L.A.
We also wanted to mention before we go that we have a brand new record shop up in Seattle. We previously had a little teeny tiny adorable
closet.
One. It was a hallway at our, what's it called, warehouse in Ballard. But we shut that one down and are moving on up. So we have an actual space at the KEXP Gathering Space, I believe it's called, in the Seattle Center.
Yeah, it's in the KEXP Gathering Space next to the La Marzocco Cafe, which is really good for coffee if you're in the area. I highly recommend it.
Hillary used to be big in the coffee world.
I knew a few things. And also what's cool is that the KEXP radio station, they have a big window there where you can watch the DJs doing their shows live while you're perusing records in our shop. Another cool thing about our new record shop is that not only do we carry Lita or Light in the Attic titles, but we also carry distro titles as well as DJ curated music sections from KEXP.
Yeah, so our old shop only carried Light in the Attic titles and titles from our distribution family. But this shop is going to be like a real live record store with like a metal section and curated sections from KEXP DJs, like
improv
you just said.
Improv jazz.
Yeah, it's the mastermind behind it is one Brad Tilby, who has worked for Light in the Attic for a couple years, and he is the best person for this job. He is like super, super passionate, and he said that this is his dream job and has been for his whole life.
And we're really happy for him to be doing it.
Yeah, he's so stoked, and he's doing such a good job, like working round the clock to get the place up and running. And it's been up and running since
Black Friday.
Black Friday.
I guess that's it for us today, huh?
Yeah.
I think that we're going to try to make this more of a regular thing, and we're hoping to air each episode on the first Tuesday of every month.
We will do our darndest.
So hopefully we'll see you in February for, what is our next episode?
I think it's Spooner Oldham.
Old Spooner.
Spooner, sweetest guy in the world, legendary session musician from the Muscle Shoals school. Anyway.
See y'all later. Thanks for listening.
Tune in next month.
Bye.
Sorry.